acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 86, Victory Lap. Sunday, August 16th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from the rehearsal space of Bovine Social Club in beautiful, sunny, downtown Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Show notes can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. And you can join the Yarns at Yin Hu group on Ravelry for discussion about topics raised in the episodes, as well as hashtag Power Pantry, our year-long endeavor to make the most of our kitchen pantries, and the Asymmetrical, which is our annual craft along. It began on August 1st and extends to the end of September. And you're invited to knit, crochet, sew, weave a garment or accessory that is asymmetrical in design, construction, or use of color. It's a lot of fun. There's already some activity happening on the boards. A few finished objects have been posted, and there are some fantastic prizes that you could win by entering your finished objects. Today's episode includes the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, ever-expanding skill set, and double happiness. The back porch. This week, I focused all of my attention on completing one project, the folded lace tank by Bristol Ivy, and this was my final entry into the Stash Dash competition, which is hosted by the Knit Girls. This year, for the first time, you had options of choosing whether to compete in a 3K, 5K, or 10K race using that amount of yarn in your projects between May 22nd and August 14th. So the competition ended at midnight on Friday, and on Friday afternoon, I was weaving in the ends of my folded lace tank. Initially, it felt like I wasn't going to be able to complete this. On Monday, I almost abandoned the project altogether. I had started it three times and reduced my needle size each time. Really, what I ought to have done was to think through the math of the stitch count and just reduce the number of stitches I was casting on. But I haven't made a lot of garments, and I was concerned about the armholes maybe being in the wrong place if I reduced it too much. Because this is an asymmetrical design, the number of stitches for the back was significantly less than the number of stitches for the front. And the way this asymmetrical design works is that you're knitting from the bottom of the tank up, has a little bit of a ribbed border, and then on the left there are three lace panels that you continue working the lace rows when you're knitting in the round. And then you work them also when you're knitting the front, the upper front portion, back and forth. This was my first time knitting lace in a garment like that and following charts. They're very simple charts. It's just a series of three nine-stitch lace patterns. But still, it was my first time, and just thinking through how that worked on the front of the garment and how that worked when I was knitting back and forth was a learning experience for me. But it meant that because of this asymmetrical design, I couldn't exactly think through what reducing the amount of stitches would do to the garment overall. So I worked with the 238 stitches required for the smallest size, and I ended up knitting this on US 3 needles in a beautiful silk linen blend yarn by Knit 1 Crochet 2. The colorway is Lupin, and it's just this gorgeous lilac lavender purple. It has some little bits of silk noil in it in red, blue, and yellow. And they're really not noticeable unless you look at that close up, but it gives the yarn a wonderful heathered effect. It's very soft and drapey. And I think it's a good choice. It resulted in a little bit boxier, more loosely fitted garment than I was hoping to achieve, but not dreadfully so. This is one of the most comfortable things I've ever made. It sits very nicely on the shoulders. It's quite demure. The sleeves go all the way out to the edge of the shoulder. The neckline is very high. And then there is a very interesting element of construction called a pleated bind-off, where some of the stitches are moved to double-pointed needles, and then the double-pointed needles are turned to face one another and placed behind the working needle, and then you knit three together for a certain number of stitches to create this very interesting pleat. So that was a new technique. It was something I was worried about, like, oh my goodness, how does this work? How is this pleated at the top? How is it not going to look too bulky and bunched up? And it doesn't. It lies flat. It looks very nice. And then gradually these lovely little lace panels are exposed as you look down the front of this sweater. It sits nicely at hip height, and I think it looks nice with something just very flowy and dark in color on the bottom. So I was wearing it with this long black knit skirt. I think this is something that can go, you know, spring, summer, into fall, and will be just a really nice, comfortable sweater to wear. Like I said, the most comfortable thing I've really knit so far. I tend to go for things that are a little more stylized, and then they're a bit difficult to wear. You can't just throw them on. The design is fashioned after a Greek chiton, which is that, you know, folded, draped garment. And it is my first entry into the Yarns at Yinhu asymmetrical craft along. And my last entry into Stash Dash. As I was weaving in the ends, I was thinking about the calculations for my final Stash Dash total. Since I'm an imperial girl, I work in yards rather than meters. So I was aiming for 5,468 yards. And after completing this tank with 788 yards, my total was 5,991 yards. So hooray, it's a victory lap, Stash Dash victory. It's been a lot of fun, and now I'm interested in looking through some of the completed projects on the Ravelry pages and adding some things that I would like to knit in the future. One of the projects that I kept thinking about every time I posted another entry on my finishing line post for Stash Dash was this beautiful shawl called the Dotted Rays Shawl. It's a design by Stephen West. It's asymmetrical in construction, and it looked to me like a great way to use leftover scraps of yarn or hand spun, because the more I looked at photographs of finished shawls, the ones that attracted me the most were ones that used a variety of colors and textures of yarn. So immediately after completing the folded lace tank, I cast on the Dotted Rays shawl. And I am using one solid color, which is in colorway High Tide. It's a beautiful blue-green color, and it's 490 yards of fingering weight yarn from Nice and Knit. That's the indie dyer. This was also a gift from Fernanda, my pen pal. I'm using US size 6 needles. For the contrasting colors, I'm using some hand spun that I completed this summer from Batlings by Hobbledehoy. And they are a mixture of blues, greens, purples, even flecks of radically different colors, but I think it all fits together. And like I said, the shawls that I admired had some really interesting variations in color. So the way the pattern works is that there are numbered rows, and then in between there's a series of short rows in the main color. So every numbered pair of rows, I'm knitting with some of my hand spun, and then maybe for that very last section, I might use all of the remaining hand spun for the short rows and then the bind off. I'm just sort of selecting colors as it occurs to me and really enjoying this easy knit in garter stitch. All summer, I've been in quest of the big shawl, and I'm hopeful that Dotted Rays is it. Ever-expanding skill set. During the month of August, the topic for hashtag Power Pantry is the freezer. And even though I haven't talked about it much on the podcast so far, I don't think I've talked about it at all, I put up the thread for August discussion, and there have been many listeners posting advice and also woes and frustrations with their freezers. So if you have anything to contribute or questions to ask, I encourage you to head on over to that thread and see what's been posted and maybe post something yourself. One of the reasons that I haven't talked too much about the freezer is that I don't have very much going on with my freezer, I thought, because I just have a refrigerator with a freezer on the bottom. It's quite small because the total capacity of the refrigerator freezer is, I think, 10.6 cubic feet. And the freezer has two drawers and one compartment, very little capacity for making ice, and I don't have a separate freezer. The story behind that is that at one time, I was given a small freezer. It looks like a dormitory refrigerator, except it's a freezer. So that's the style. It has shelves and, a little compartment up top. And I don't know what the capacity is, but it's a few cubic feet. And the reason why I was interested in having it is that I had the opportunity to secure some grass-fed beef It was actually pasture raised and then grain finished on spent beer grains from a brewery that's local to my mom. And my mom and some friends were purchasing, I think, half of a beef, and I had the opportunity to, you know, get some cuts for myself. So I had about 30 different packages of meat. I was so excited about this because I rarely buy beef unless I can find something that, you know, I feel confident about the way it was raised. And I was just, you know, very wholehearted about this being really good stuff. I put it in the freezer, and since I had just acquired it, I really didn't have other things for the freezer. So it was just the meat in there. About, I don't know, it must have been 2 weeks later, Hurricane Sandy happened. I had moved a few items up to the freezer in my refrigerator, and the rest was downstairs. I knew that a full freezer would have better chances than a mostly empty freezer in the case of a power outage. So I froze additional bags of water and tried to pack that freezer as much as I could before the anticipated loss of power. So the loss of power came, didn't open either freezer for the entire duration. I think we were without power for about 6 days. I checked the downstairs freezer first. This was in our little tiny basement area. It was cold, but I didn't feel confident about keeping that meat. So it all had to go. Oh, it was devastating. The upstairs freezer was fine. I was really impressed with the ability of this freezer to keep its cold. There were still chunks of ice in the ice cube trays. And I defrosted it eventually and, you know, put everything back in, but I was completely confident of all of the food that was in there. But the downstairs freezer was emptied, and it's remained unplugged and emptied ever since then. So I had about 3 weeks, I think, with a separate freezer, and just came to the conclusion that, you know, really I don't do enough with the freezer to warrant that energy use. And really, it's just better to try and keep my upstairs freezer well stocked and really stay aware of its contents. I think that's the biggest challenge. And in reading a lot of the posts from listeners, the biggest challenge is just having this freezer and not having an accurate understanding of what's in it, and then just having to do the extra steps and the extra work of going to get something from the freezer, which is most likely not in your kitchen. And then if it's a chest freezer, you have like these layers of contents, and it's just easy to lose track and to have things that you're not using. So in cooking for two people, sure, there are times when I would love to have a larger capacity in the freezer and especially in the refrigerator. But we've developed workarounds. Like most of the time when I'm going to need to refrigerate a lot of items, it's Thanksgiving or Christmas time. It's cold, and I can put an ice chest on my porch and keep items stored outside. You know, that's worked well. And then by the time the festivities are over, all of that has been used up and we're just back to our, you know, tiny capacity refrigerator freezer. And that's perfect. That's enough for us. A few ways that I've been using the freezer, because all month I've been thinking about it more carefully. One of the challenges with this Blomberg unit is that there's not very much ice making capacity. Most freezers have a portion where you can put ice cube trays, and there's just one tiny tray for ice cubes. And so things that I often think about making with ice, I make with frozen ingredients instead. And one of those cases is smoothies. I just am in the habit of taking bananas that are kind of past their prime, sticking them in a freezer bag and freezing them. And then when I want a smoothie, instead of using a room temperature banana and ice, I just use a frozen banana. This past week, I've made smoothies with frozen banana, rice milk, and just a little bit of agave syrup. They're delicious, nutritious. I really love it. So I can do that with any fruit or combination of fruit. Another thing I try to do is refrain from putting things into my compost if I know I can use them for cooking later. And one of the things I cook all the time is a chicken stock or a poultry stock. I make a whole chicken or a whole turkey on my Big Green Egg. I reserve the carcass, and immediately, just that same evening that I made the poultry, I make a stock. And I'm sure that I'm using as much of my purchase as possible. So when I'm ready to make that stock, I just pull this bag out of the freezer in which I've been putting the ends of onions, the ends of carrots, you know, scraps from herbs that I may have been using, like the stems and stalks. And I just put all of that into the stock pot, and it, you know, without having to do any dicing, and with this great feeling that this is all food I haven't thrown away, I just add that to the stock. Also, ends of mushrooms. Usually I save mushroom scraps in a separate bag and make a very special mushroom stock using only mushroom ends once I've filled a bag with those things. Something else that I do is just organize and separate things into freezer bags immediately after returning from a grocery shopping trip. So I know it seems to take up a lot of space in the freezer, and it's just not optimum to store meats or things right in their packaging that they came from the store. So I usually separate those items into the serving sizes that we use and put them into freezer bags and put them directly in the freezer. And this saves a lot of space in my tiny freezer and also makes things much more simple to use. I'm more likely to use them as well. I hope that you'll share your tips for making the freezer an important part of your kitchen pantry. Double happiness. I couldn't be happier about the progress of test knitting on my new shawl design. It's an asymmetrical shawl. It's called Rested Wing, and I was able to send out the pattern directions to 4 test knitters who have signed on for the task a little bit early. I managed to do all of my calculations and work on the directions to get those things out a little bit ahead of what's expected. So the test knitters are already working on their projects. There's such variety in their selection of yarns and even some of their techniques. So I'm really excited about their posts on the Ravelry threads and on their project pages. And it seems like all is going according to plan for an October 1st pattern release for this shawl. Thank you so much to Out of This World, Polka Dot Knits, Kay Connors, and Tia and Kat for your efforts so far. I look forward to seeing more progress on your knitting this coming week. I've been reading Color, A Natural History of the Palette by Victoria Finlay. I'm almost finished with the chapter on blue, and up next is a chapter on indigo, so I think I will combine a discussion of those two in my next podcast episode. In that segment, I will also be talking about some tiny indigo plants that came to my house at the beginning of summer, and they have been growing quite successfully. So I want to talk a little bit about that and do some research on the indigo plant as well. So you can look forward to that in episode 87.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves are down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Kurtz sings, burn out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is So Wheat. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page, joining the Yarns at Yin Hu group on Ravelry, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.